Talmud discusses different things that are ma'akim. The seven kanim in the menorah ma'akim zeh. And the two parshas in the mezuzah ma'akim, the dalet parshas in the tefillin, and the dalet tzitzis ha'ma'akim zeh. That's how we paskin. And then the Mishnah adds on a line both to the mezuzah and to the tefillin. So the simple pshat is oisachas. You're missing one letter. So the Gemara asks pshita. Of course, oisachas is miyakim. The Gemara says no. Means even the kutsa shel yud is also miyakim. What is the kutsa shel yud? What is the kutsa shel yud? So you have here different interpretations. Three different interpretations. So Rashi writes kutsa shel yud regu yemini shel hayud. When you write a yud, so it goes down a little bit on the right side, on the bottom. If it doesn't go down, then it's not a yud. Regel yimini shel ayud. So the Gemara asks on that. That's what the Mishnah has to tell me. If you're missing a letter, the Gemara thought it's a double pashut. Why was it a double pashut that if you're missing a letter in the mezuzah, missing a letter in the Sefer Torah is a machlekes? Whether it's possible. The Rambam, we spoke last week, the Rambam and the Ramban, both. Ramban quotes from the Zohar. Ramban and the Hakdom, the Chumash, quotes from the Zohar. Sefer Torah Shechas Reisachas is psula, and the Ramban apparently also quoted from the Zohar. But the Gemara only has a pshita by mezuzah and tefillin because uchsav tom ksiva tam. That's what Rashi says. It doesn't say by Sefer Torah. We pass in the Shulchan Aruch. We pass like the Ramban and the Ramban. That if you're missing Sefer Torah Shechas Reisachas, all Sefer Torah is possible. Can you learn Kriyas HaTorah from a Pasul of Sefer Torah? Can you learn Kriyas HaTorah from a printed Chumash? Can you learn Kriyas HaTorah? So during the Second World War, the Jewish Welfare Board, the JWB, was controlled by the conservative and the reform rabbinate. There were hardly any Orthodox rabbis. There was a famous rabbi, Rabbi Herschel Schechter. That's someone else. That's Rabbi J.J. Schechter's father. He was a famous rabbi. He was a very prominent rabbi. He was a chaplain in the American Army in the Second World War. He wasn't married yet. He was still single. He got married after the war was over. He got married in 1948, I think. So, but there weren't too many. There weren't so many Orthodox rabbis at that time in the chaplaincy. So the Jewish Welfare Board issued a publication with a whole bunch of Piskei Halacha, the Shubas, written by the conservative rabbis. So one of the shadows was, can they lay Kriyas HaTorah at a DP camp? After the war was over, all the concentration camps where the Nazis were torturing the Jews were converted into displaced persons camps, DP camps. Conditions were very bad. By the American Army was in control of the DP camp. So the shadow was, can you learn Kriyas HaTorah? They didn't have kosher and Sefer Torah. They had a printed Chumash. So they said, yes, it's a Feirish and Tshuvas HaRambam, that you can, for the purpose of learning Kriyas HaTorah, you don't need a kosher Sefer Torah. So you can learn Kriyas HaTorah with brachas from a printed Chumash. It's true, there is such a Tshuvas HaRambam. The Tshuvas HaRambam is in contradiction to what it says in the Mishnah Torah. The Mishnah Torah, the Rambam wrote later. So the Mishnah Torah, he writes, when a Sefer Torah is kosher, when it's not kosher, what's the relevance of a kosher, having a Sefer Torah kosher? So he said, there's a mitzvah, ksiva Sefer Torah, kisva lechem asashir hazois, there's a mitzvah on every Jewish man to write the Sefer Torah. Shaila fi yotze b'shut v'sana, we'll have to discuss that, it's coming up in the Gemara soon. If you yotze b'shut v'sana, let's say, in Europe, what happened was the community would chip in every 50, 60 years. Everybody would give, they didn't have money. Every 60 years, everyone would get together, they would give a dollar each, and then they would commission a sefer, they write a sefer Torah. So all the people who are alive would, wealthy people would write their own sefer Torah. Today, once in a while, a wealthy person commissions a sefer to write a sefer Torah. But the community would get together every 60 years or so to write a sefer Torah. So they would work on the assumption that one is in fulfillment of the mitzvah, ksiva sefer Torah, even if you do it b'shutfus. Each one gives a dollar, and altogether they put out a sefer. That's a question. The Gemara in Chulin has a discussion. Which mitzvahs can you fulfill b'shutfus? Which mitzvah, let's say, shalachem, on the first 2 days of Sukkot, in each shalachem. So let's say the father died, and the father bought dalamidim, and the dalamidim go b'yerusha to all of the sons. So they all own it b'shutfus. Is that good enough for shalachem? So the din is that it's no good. It's no good. It has to belong to you. The Gemara discusses, how do you know which mitzvahs that need shalachem? Which is it? which are you yotze b'shutzus, which not. So the Gemara gives you a klal. The klal is, whenever it's written in Chumash, b'loshen rabbim, then you're yotze b'shutzus. Whenever it's written b'loshen yochid, then you're not yotze b'shutzus. So some of the recent poskim who talk about this issue, the Pischik Shuvah and Yerudeh, Hilchos Sefer Torah, Chedigim Yerudeh, quotes this discussion. And some of the Achrayim say, here it says, kisvo lochem, and sashira hazal. So based on the Gemara's rule, whenever it's written b'loshen rabbim, then you can fulfill the mitzvah b'shutfis. You should be able to be yotze b'shutfis. So some, it's really yet, has a tshuva about this also. So he quotes the Achrayim, and he says, not only do we not know how to darshan psukim, even if the Gemara tells you the rule, we don't know how to apply the rule. We may be applying the rule incorrectly, and maybe you're not yotze b'shutfis. But in Europe, they couldn't afford it. The best they could do. They couldn't have every Jewish man going to commission a sefer to write a sefer Torah. It's impossible. They didn't have enough money to pay for it. So that's the best they could do. Anyway, getting back. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Sefer Torah, what's the relevance, what's the significance of knowing whether Sefer Torah is kosher or kosher? So he says, the relevance is whether you want fulfillment in the mitzvahs, kisvo lachem es hashir hazois. And number two, there's a mitzvah of kriyas ha-Torah, midirabbanan, every sheni v'chamisha, in Shabbos, to learn kriyas ha-Torah. Can only be yotze kriyas ha-Torah from a kosher sefer Torah. It's not a kosher sefer Torah, you're not yotze. So the case of Mishnah is a commentary on the side of the Rambam written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. So he quotes this Tshuvas HaRashba. The Rashba said there's a contradiction here. There's a Tshuvas HaRambam where the Rambam said not so. That's the Tshuvas HaRambam that the Jewish Welfare Board, the conservative rabbis, quoted that Tshuvas HaRambam. So it's, the Rambam changed his mind, obviously. The Yaldusa, when he was younger, he thought that you don't need a kosher sefer Torah for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah of kriyas ha-Torah. You only need a kosher sefer Torah for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah of ksiva sefer Torah, kisvo lachem es hashira hazois. And the Rambam, when he got older, when he wrote the Mishnah Torah, so he changed his mind. So b'di'evid, we rely on the Rambam in the tshuva. Let's say you lane half the sedra in the middle of the Reviyah, Hamishi, find a glaring error in the sedra. It's missing a letter. Has the wrong letter. Has a kuf instead of a chaf, whatever. Aleph instead of an ayin. A major mistake. So they have to start laning all over again. So the Beis Yosef quotes from his Rebbe, Mari Beirav, when they made the Chiddush HaSmicha in the 1500s in Tzfat, all the Rabbanim got together and they convert Smicha. So they convert Smicha to the Mari Beirav, and to Rabbi Yosef Karo, and to the Al Shechafu. So these were two of the lucky winners, the Mari Beirav and Rabbi Yosef. So the Rabbi Yosef quotes his Rebbe, Mari Beirav says, that with the Yevid we rely on the Tshuvas HaRambam, so you don't have to lean over. But L'chatchila, we wouldn't allow Kriyas HaTorah in a Posel HaSefer Torah. In the Mishnah Berurah says, let's say they found a mistake in Revi. So the din is you don't have to lean over what you lean. You put away the Sefer Torah, take out a new one, and you continue to lean for the new one. But if it's possible to squeeze seven aliyahs in from here to the end of the Sedra, you should try to do that. To be choshish, maybe you weren't yotze with what you did before. So Rabbi Soloveitchik thought that if it's in the yeshiva, if you have an etoyra, if you're not dealing with Balabatim, you're going to fire the rabbi, they're going to get too angry. He said, more correctors, you should start all over again from the beginning. You should be choshish what the Rambam paskened in the Mishnah Torah, not to rely with the Evid on what he wrote in the Tshuva. He backed out. But Moshe Soloveitchik used to say, whenever you have a contradiction between the Rambam, every so often there's a contradiction between the Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayos or in the Tshuvas, and the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah. So the Rambam obviously changed his mind. That's what the Rashba says. Oh yeah, the Rambam the Aldusa, when he was younger, thought that you can be yotze kriyas ha-Torah from a posel sefer Torah, from a printed chumash. There were no printed chumashim then, but from a non-kosher sefer Torah. And b'ziknusa, he changed his mind. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik used to say, you shouldn't just ignore the original Rambam. The Rambam, before he changed his mind, was also Rishon. So just like if you have machlokes, the Rambam, the Rabbi Natan, you have to work, you have to break your head to figure out what's pshat in Rabbi Natan. So if you have machlokes, the Rambam and the Rambam, he's also Rishon before he changed his mind, before he wrote the Mishnah Torah. You have to work hard to understand why the Rambam was originally like that. Anyway, so that's what Rav Soloveitchik recommended, that if the rabbi can get the Balabatim to go along with him, they should start learning all over again from the beginning. Give seven aliyahs, not like the Mishnah Berurah says, squeeze in seven aliyahs from here to the end. You should give seven aliyahs, start all over again. That would be recommended. If it's too much, Tircha de Tzibur, so then you follow what it says in the Mishnah Berurah. Try to squeeze in seven aliyahs. I remember once I was in shul, I was davening in the Aguda in Washington Heights, and they found a real mistake in the Sefer Torah in Parshas Hazinu. And the rabbi in the shul happened to be the Novominsky Rebbe, the one who just passed away a couple of months ago. He was a very big Talmid Chacham. He was officially at that time the Rosh Yeshiva in Breuer's Yeshiva. He used to teach in Breuer's school, and then he went to Skokie. And then when the Rosh Yeshiva from Breuer's went to Gateshead, he left Washington Heights. Then they invited Rabbi Perlot to come back from Skokie, and they made him the Rosh Yeshiva. So the tradition was, whoever was the Rosh Yeshiva in Breuer's Beis Medrash was the rabbi in the Aguda Shul in Washington Heights. So he was the rabbi. So when they found the mistake in the Sefer Torah, Parshas Hazinu, so he wasn't thinking, so he said right away, try to see that you can, if you can squeeze in seven aliyahs, like it says in the Mishnah Berurah. If you can squeeze in seven aliyahs, and hit to the end, so they did like that. And then, we came back to Daven Mincha. Every Shabbos they have a minyan for Mincha, we called it to summer and winter, to Daven Mincha early. So we came back, so before they started Mincha, he made an announcement. He made a mistake this morning. He was very intellectually honest. No one would have known that he made a mistake. I knew that it was wrong. But the other people didn't know. I didn't say anything. He said that din only applies in every other seder except for Hazinu. The Gemara says Hazinu, there's a din. You have to lay in Haziv Lach. We know what the Hafsakas are in Hazinu, and you're not allowed to change the Hafsakas. You're not allowed to make Hafsakas. You have to have the Hafsakas the way it's printed in the Chumash. So he explained to the Balabatim that his suggestion in the morning was wrong. That Mishnah Berurah, that if you can squeeze in seven aliyahs from here to the end, you do that, that applies to every other sedra except for Hazin. Hazin, you're not allowed to change. I remember I was once in a shul in London on Parshas Shabbos, Parshas Hazinu, and the bar mitzvah boy was a kohen, and his father was a kohen, and his grandfather was a kohen. I don't think they were Shomer Shabbos, but they were kohanim. And they all three wanted to get aliyahs. So how can you give three aliyahs to kohanim? You can give two. You can give the grandfather can get the first aliyah, and the bar mitzvah boy can get the machter. You can't have three unless you make a hoysofa. So they made a hoysofa in the middle of Hazin. So I was walking home. I was eating by one of the dayanim. Dai Rosnas was a dayan at that time. He died a long time ago. He learned Baruch Ber. He was friendly with all the rabbis from Wayu. They all learned in Europe together. So I was eating by the dayan. So I asked him, you're not allowed to make hoysofas in Hazin. He never heard of the din. So the Farish did in the Gemara. Not allowed to make any hoysofas in Hazin. Okay, getting back over here. Not more. Yes?
Well, you already
mentioned
the case of the concentration camp. Should they be with brachos without brachos?
No, they should lay in. It says in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says, if you don't have a kosher Sefer Torah, just have a printed chumash or something, you should give seven aliyahs, but you don't see any brachos. We should give the seven aliyahs to be choshish for the Rambam's opinion that you can yearn to kriyas the Rambam and the Tshuva, that you can yearn to kriyas with the minyan without a kosher sefer Torah. But you don't say a bracha though. If you don't have a minyan, let's say during COVID, if you don't have a minyan at home, then you don't gain anything by laying the seven aliyahs without a minyan. But if you have a minyan at home, just don't have a kosher sefer Torah. So then the Ramah recommends you should be choshes for the Tshuva Zarama, that one can be in fulfillment of the Takona Kriyas HaTorah even without a kosher sefer Torah. So again, so how did the Gemara say Nachamon? If you're missing one letter in the mezuzah or the tefillin, of course it's possible because it says Chsav Tom Ksiva Tam. Missing a letter in tefillin and mezuzah is possible. So the Gemara said Pshita. The Gemara said no, the Chiddush is Kutzah Shal Yud. Kutzah Shul, so Rashi learns Kutzah Shul means the leg on the bottom of the yud sticking out. If it doesn't have that leg, it's mamish not even Gemara. Nami pshita, it's not a yud without that. Hello, no, it means a different thing. Sadech meatfan doesn't mean if you're missing one letter or the letter doesn't have a tzura size. Hello, lekidich, lekidich, the Rabbi Yudah Merav. The other din that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Yehuda was an Amora who learned both by Rav and Shmuel. I already forgot who died first. And when the first one died, then he went to learn by the other one. Rav and Shmuel both lived in Eretz Yisrael. And then they both left Eretz Yisrael to go to Babel to establish yeshivas, because the Jews in Babel were very frum, but they were big Amoraim, so they were making major mistakes. And Kashrus and Shabbos and Taras and Mishpacha, they were very frum. So they came and they taught a lot of Torah. The Gemara says after Rav came to Babel, everything was on a much higher level. Then the learning was stronger in Babel than it was in Eretz Yisrael. But for many years, there was hardly any learning in Babel. So Rav often quotes Rabbi Yehuda. Often quotes Am Rabbi Yehuda, Rav, Am Rabbi Yehuda, Shmuel. Every so often he has his own din, not quoting Rav or Shmuel, but most of the time he's either quoting Rav or quoting from Shmuel. So he quotes the din in the name of Rav. Kolo Shein Amukav Vil Lomi Arba Ruchaseh Psula. If the letters in the Sefer Torah, the Tefillin and the Mezuzah are touching each other, then they're possible. That's called Mukav Gvil. Mukav Gvil. Gvil means parchment. There are three kinds of parchment. Gvil means if you have the hide of the animal was not split. So if the whole hide is there, so that's called Gvil. They used to split the hide in half, and then the one half would be called Klaf, and one half would be called Duchsustis. So one of them they used to use for Ksivas Mezuzah. Gvil they used to use for Ksivas Sefer Torah, the thick parchment that's not split in half. And if it's split in half, so I think the outside one is called the Sustas, I think the inside half is called Klaf, and one of them is used for Tefillin, and one of them is for Mezuzah. Today, we don't do that. Today, they just scrape off the outer part, and they just use the inside part for all three. So if it's third Tefillin and Mezuzah, and that's a big question, is that the proper practice or not? And they're working on changing that practice. Anyway, so the Gemara says that you need Mukav Gvil. Gvil is only in the Sefer Torah. You need Gvil. In Tefillin and Mezuzah, you don't need Gvil. So if he says it didn't, every Ois has to be Mukav Gvil, he's probably talking about the Sefer Torah. So Rashi writes over here, the last two words in Rashi on the page, of Tefillin Kamari. We're talking about Tefillin over here. What do you mean you're talking about Tefillin? But it says Mukav Gvil. It sounds like he's talking about Sefer Torah. So the Mordechai is one of the later Balei HaTosfos. Balei HaTosfos went through quite a few generations. Balei HaTosfos started off as Rashi's grandchildren, Rashi's son-in-law, was Rabbeinu Meir. Rabbeinu Meir married the Rivon, was also a son-in-law of Rashi. Rashi didn't have any sons, he only had daughters. So the Rabbeinu Meir was his son-in-law of Rashi. He had three sons. The oldest son was the Rashbam, Rabbeinu Shmuel ben Meir. Then the Rabbeinu Tam was much younger. Rabbeinu Tam was a little boy when Rashi died. Rashbam used to learn b'chavrusa with Rashi. Rashbam rarely argues with Rashi. Rashbam learned with Rashi. He usually doesn't argue. Rabbeinu Tam felt free to argue with Rashi all the time, because he was a little child when Rashi died. And then a third brother was born after Rashi passed away. He was named after Rashi, Rabbeinu Shlomo ben Meir. There's a long, long Rashi on the base in the end of Perakol HaBosser on Chulin. It says at the end of the long, long essay, it's a whole essay, said this was by Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Shlomo, who was named after Rashi. He was born after Rashi died. Those were the three sons of Rabbeinu Meir. So that was the beginning of the Balei HaTosfos, where Rashi's grandchildren. And then they married, they had cousins and so on. So the Balei HaTosfos went for quite a few generations, quite a while. And then there was Rabbeinu Yehuda Sirleon, was one of the Balei HaTosfos, and his Talmud was the one who wrote the Erzeruah, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, who lived in Vienna. And then one of his Talmudim was the Maharam Rutenberg. That's the end of the period of the Balei HaTosfos. He lived in Rutenberg, that's a city in Germany. And then the Maharam Rutenberg is put in prison by the Goyish government just to hold up the Jewish community for the ransom money. That was a common practice in Europe, that gangsters would kidnap someone, or the government would kidnap a wealthy person, and they would hold them hold up the family for the ransom money. So the Marmrutmerk said, based on the Mishnah in Gittin, they're not allowed to pay the ransom money. The Rosh was a student of the Marmrutmerk. The Rosh and the Mordechai and the one who wrote Hagos Maimri on the bottom of the Ram, they were all students of the Marmrutmerk. So the Rosh was a wealthy man. He was going to put up half of the money on his own. He was going to raise the rest of the money from the Jewish community. Marmrutmerk said, you're not allowed to. There's a Mishnah in Gittin. You're just going to encourage the Goyish government to hold other people, to kidnap other people and hold them in prison. You never give in to terrorists. That's the position of the American government. You never give in to terrorists because they're just going to encourage them to terrorize more, to capture more people. So the Marmrutmerk left instructions they shouldn't redeem him, they should let him rot away in prison. So he died in prison. But then after he left instructions, even after he dies, they should leave his body there, they shouldn't redeem him. Even after he died, that they didn't listen to him. One wealthy balabas couldn't take it, so he paid all the money, and he redeemed the dead body of the Marmrutmerk against the wishes. He said, the Marmrutmerk said, you're not allowed against the wishes, but because he did it, because of Kavod HaTorah, so when he died later, he was buried next to the Marmrutmerk, even though he did Shaloi Kedin. But he did it because he wanted to, he respected Marmrutmerk so much. So they didn't have anything, the government didn't have any claims against the Marmrutmerk. He didn't do anything illegal. He was a good citizen. They just wanted to hold up the Jewish community for ransom money. So they allowed the students to come every day. So the Marmrutmerk used to, the Mordechai and the Rosh, and the Agos Maim, all the Talmidim used to come every day. He used to give a shiur for them. And on Shabbos, they used to make the fire when it would be cold. In the wintertime, they made a fire. And on Shabbos, when it would be cold, on Shulchan Aruch, they quote, they would ask the Goyish prison guards to please make a fire. Then Amir Eliakim is muta b'makam chad l'shem b'sakana, to prevent them from getting sick. They quote that story in Shulchan Aruch. So the Mordechai in the back, the Mordechai has a likut, the Ziska here has the Mordechai in the back, is a likut of different Rishonim. All Balei HaTosef, he never quotes any Chachmei Sfarah. He never quotes the Rambam or the Ramban or the Ritva. He didn't have that. He only had Balei HaTosef. So he quotes this discussion. Why did Rashi write the Tefillin Kamayri? What this din of Mukav Gvil only applies to Tefillin? Is that possible? So he says there is a possibility. Do we have any dinim that only apply to Tefillin Mezuzah that don't apply to the Sefer Torah? So he says yes, there's a din that you need Ksiva Kesidron. Let's say you have a Sefer Torah and you find a mistake in the middle of the Kriyas HaTorah. So if it's not Shabbos, you correct it. You have a right to correct it. But it's Ksiva Shaloi Kesidron, but they wrote the rest of the Sefer Torah. So there is no din that a Sefer Torah needs Ksiva Kesidron. You can write the Sefer Torah backwards, forwards, you can write it however you want. A lot of times I have different sofrim writing at the same time. Just when this Corona began, so Lubavitch lost a lot of people because they weren't careful at all in the beginning. Somehow they thought there's nothing. They thought everything was a joke. So they lost more people percentage-wise than other groups did. So they have some tradition from years ago from some Chassidish Rebbe that when there's an epidemic and a lot of people are dying, you should write a Sefer Torah and that will save lives. So they wanted to write a Sefer Torah quickly. So they commissioned a few sofrim to write. So one sefer was writing one part, another service line, another part, and then they stitched it all together. So it wasn't written Kesidra, it wasn't written Bereshis Barlikim, every word in order that it appears. So if there's no need to write Ksiva Kesidra, but by Tefillin and Mezuzah, it says in the Mechilta, and the Gemara never says it. There's a Mechilta that says it. Tefillin and Mezuzah have a special din that has to be written Ksiva Kesidra. So that's what the Mordechai says. Maybe this din of Mukav Gvil, maybe Rashi means to say that it only applies to Tefillin and Mezuzah, and it doesn't apply to the Sefer Torah. Because we know that there's a din that only applies to Tefillin and Mezuzah regarding Ksiva, namely Ksiva Kesidron. There's a Tesis later where Tesis talks about I have a Mezuzah or Tefillin, and I realize that I have a word missing. So Tesis says you can add on the word afterwards. So they ask on the margin of the Gemara, it's later in the Spirit. They write on the margin, how can you add on a word later? You need Ksiva Kesidron. So apparently Tesis either wasn't aware of this Mechilta, it's Shulchan Aruch it's quoted, either Tesis wasn't aware, or maybe they had a different shot in the Mechilta. Ksiva Kesidron means, doesn't mean you have to write all the words in order, that's how we learn, It means the ksav should read in order. If the words are out of order in the sefer, in a sefer Torah, if you have a word missing, so you can write it in between the lines. In tefillin and mezuzah, maybe you can't write it in between the lines. Maybe you have to erase enough so you write everything in the line. It should read kisidra. Maybe you don't really need the ksiva to be the ksav should be kisidra. Maybe Tosis had a different shot. That's a question. You get to the Tosis later. Where the Tosis meant there's no din of ksiva kisidra. Anyway, but the Matcha raises this question. When Rashi writes here, but tefillin, the last two words on the daf, tefillin and kamarim, Rashi means that the din of mukha gvil only applies to tefillin and mezuzah, because there is a special din, namely ksiva kisidra by tefillin and mezuzah, that doesn't apply to Sefer Torah. Is that correct? So he says he doesn't think so, because gvil, book of gvil means the whole parchment without splitting it. The gvil is only for Sefer Torah. You don't write film, you don't write mezuzah on klav. You don't write on gvil. You write, one of them you write on klav, one of them you write on duchsusis, the three different kinds of parchment. So that's the question. Why did Rashi say tefillin? Why did Rashi? Rashi really meant tefillin? Or it's labdavke? So it's labdavke. Why did he say? That's the question. Is it possible? Let's say ksiva shem Hashem in his sefer Torah. You can write it backwards instead of you cave up. You can write it backwards, out of order. Ksiva shem Hashem in his sefer Torah is not as chomer as writing tefillin and mezuzah. So the Mordechai has such a suggestion. Maybe the Shemus in the Sefer Torah have to be written Kisidron. Even though we assume Kisidron is only a din in Tefillin and Mezuzah, it doesn't apply to the Sefer Torah. But how can it be that Shem Hashem in the Sefer Torah doesn't have his Chomer a din of Ksiva as Tefillin and Mezuzah? Maybe Shem Hashem has to have Ksiva Kisidron. That's a Chiddush. The Minchas Chinuch has a fascinating discussion. You write Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, so you write first Yud, then you write a Hey, then you write a Vav, then you write a Hey. So he says, the Gemara says in Shavuos, there is Zayin Shem and Shein in the Mechokim. There are seven names of HaKadosh Baruch that you're not allowed to erase. What do you mean, Shem and Shein in the Mechokim? It says in Chumash Dvarim that when we come to Eretz Yisrael, Shibartam Esmat Tzivosam, Asher Rehem Tisru Fum Vesh, Psila Lehem Tegadim, we should destroy all Avodah Zarah. We should destroy the name of Avodah Zarah. Then the next pasuk says, you're not allowed to do that, HaKadosh Baruch. You're not allowed to do what? You're not allowed to be noted seven men on this bayat. You're not allowed to break a wall from the base of the Kadosh. You're not allowed to erase Shem Hashem. There is seven names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are considered names. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Rach, Mechan, and Arach HaPayim, Rab Chesed, and Emes. That's a description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not Shem Hashem. But Yud Kei Vavke, Aleph Daleth Nun Yud, and Shin Daleth Yud, and so on, these are names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara singles out that there are seven. There are different gears what the seven names are, but there are seven names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are Shem and Shein and Nimchokim. So Yud Kei is one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki Bekor Hashem Tzuvay Lama. Yud Kei is Hashem Hashem. So the Minchas Chinuch raises the question, if you write in the Sefer Torah, you write Yud Kei, so you have already Hashem. Then you write a Vav. In a certain sense, you just did Mechikas Hashem. Before you wrote the Vav, it was Hashem. Kor. Now you write a Vav, you just change it. So he just ruined the Shem Hashem by adding on a letter. So he says, maybe you should write them backwards. Maybe you should write Yud Kei Vav Kei backwards. So he says, no. Mordechai says, since it's a din of Ksiva Kesidron on Tefillin and Mezuzah, it's inconceivable that the din shouldn't apply to the Shem Hashem and the Sefer Torah. Ksiva Shem Hashem should at least be as Chomer, perhaps more Chomer, than Ksiva Tefillin and Mezuzah. You shouldn't write Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei backwards. So what can you do? Every time you write Yud Kei Vav Kei, you're going to do Mechikas Hashem. So he quotes, there's a Mishnah in Yuma, where the Mishnah quotes the Pasuk, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Hashem Rishoyim Yirkav. Whenever you mention Zecher Tzadik, whenever you mention the Tzadik, you should give a Bracha. A living Tzadik, you should say Shlita, a person died, you say Zecher Levracha, okay. Mishem Rishayim, when you mention the name of a Rasha, Yirkav. What do you mean? Yirkav usually rekav means to rot. And over here, the Mefarshim say Yirkav is an extra resh. It really means Yikov should be cursed. Zechel Tzadik Levracha, when you mention the name of a Tzadik, you should give a blessing. When you mention the name of a Rasha, you should give a curse. So the Mishnah lists off the Eilu Lebracha, and the Mishnah and Yuma lists off certain people who made major donations to the Beis HaMikdash. So they're remembered in history for the major donations that they made. Then it says, Rishayim Rishayim Yirkav, there are a couple of people who go down in history as miserable Rishayim, that they knew certain things and they didn't want to share their Chachma with anybody else. So the Gemara says there was a person who was a genius. He could hold four pens in his hand at one time and write four letters at the same time. He didn't want to teach anybody else the trick, how to do it. So the Mishnah curses him. So the Mefarshim asked, and I know how to stand on my head. So I make a lot of money, and what do they have? And what do they do these crazy things? In the circus, Mishigas in the circus. So if I don't want to teach everybody how to do crazy things in the circus, and they curse me, they put me in the Mishnah. So this crackpot knew how to hold four pens, and he didn't teach anybody else. Why should they curse him? Shame, shame, you got you. So the Mefarshim on the Mishnah say, no, he knew how to hold four pens and write Yudke Vavke simultaneously. And what's the big deal? It's also like he belongs in the circus. So what's the big deal? He says, no, the Menchas says, that's a big deal. You can't write it out of order because you need Achidush, you need Ksiva Kisidrim by the Shem Hashem of the Sefer Torah. It cannot be. It's inconceivable. Mordechai has this idea. The din of Ksiva Kisidrim only applies to Tefillin and Mezuzah, that it cannot be that it doesn't apply with the Shem Hashem and the Sefer Torah. So you have to have Kisidrim. So what's the din? Let's say you'll write Tefillin and Mezuzah, not that you write it out of order. You write it all the letters simultaneously. Is that no good? Because it wasn't Kisidron. Hereafter, you write, let's say, Shema Yisrael, Shin, Mem, Ayin. So if you write Ayin, Mem, Shin, so it's possible. What if you write all three letters simultaneously? Is that called Shaloi Kisidron? Or no, as long as not Shaloi Kisidron is good. So that's a question of Poskim. So that's what the Minchas Chinuch suggests. Maybe that's the pshat. He quotes, maybe that's the pshat. The chokhmah was that if you write Yud K, then you write Vav in a certain sense, that's Mechikas Hashem. And if you write all the four letters simultaneously, then maybe it's not Ksiva Shalik Kisidr, maybe you don't need Kisidr. Just if it's Shalik Kisidr, out of order, then it'll be possible. Here he wrote all the four letters simultaneously, so maybe it's good. Achidish. Achidish, that's all. That's the whole literature. Why did Rashi say Tfilin Kamari? Why not Sefer Torah? Rashi means that you don't need Muk of Gvil by a Sefer Torah, or Rashi means that's a question. Is that possible? You don't need Muk. We assume you need Muk of Gvil by a Sefer Torah also. Anyway, so let's go back again. Kutzu Shel Yud. What's the story again? The Mishnah says that Tefillin and Mezuzah Ksav Echad Me'akev. So I don't need a Mishnah to tell me that every letter is Me'akev. Rashi says it says Ksiv Atama, Ksav Tom, Ksiv Atama. If you're missing a letter, it's not a Ksiv Atama. So it must be, it tells me Kutzu Shel Yud. So Rashi says, no, Honami Pshita. It doesn't have a Tzuras Ois. If the Yud doesn't have the Regal on the right side, it doesn't have a Tzuras Ois of a Yud. So that's a double portion. So it must be, it tells me the Din, that you need Mukav Gvil. In Shulchan Aruch, they write like this. Sometimes Mukav Gvil means if the letters are touching each other, so it's no good. You have to have empty space. Kuchut Asari, you have to have a slight empty space of white in between each letter and the next letter. You have to have between one word and the other, you have to have a bigger space. And between one parsha and the other, one paragraph and the other, you have to have a bigger space. Sometimes you have a psucha, sometimes you have a stuma. A psucha is when you end a paragraph in the middle of the line, and you leave everything empty till the end of the line, and the next paragraph will begin on the next line. That's a psucha. That's a bigger pause. And a stuma means you end the first paragraph in the middle of the line, you leave an empty space, enough space to write nine letters, and then you start the next paragraph at the end of that line. So the Rishonim have, you look in the back of the Gemara, they quote this. So the Rishonim say, when the Baal Kori lanes Kriyas HaTorah, he should pause in between one pasuk and the other. And if it's a paragraph, there's a psucha or a stuma, he should pause more than between one pasuk and the other. And if it's a psucha, he should pause longer than a stuma. The idea being, Rashi and Chumash quotes this. What's the idea of the psuchas and the stumas? When Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him the dinim. So some of the dinim were very complicated, and some of the dinim are not so hard to understand. So when the dinim were not hard to understand, Rabbi Shalom told him, second din, third din, fourth din, one after the other. When it was a little hard, so Rabbi Shalom paused to give him a chance to review. So if it didn't need that much concentration, wasn't that complicated, so there would be a stuma in the Sefer Torah, a little pause. If the din was very complicated, so the Rabbi Shalom would give him a longer pause, then parsha to parsha, in order to be able to digest the first parsha. So this is relevant for the Baal Kore. Most Baal Kriya don't learn like that. Many Baal Kriya, they read run-on sentences. They read, when they finish one pasuk, they run right away into the next pasuk. You don't even know when one pasuk ends and the next pasuk begins. That's not proper. That's a violation of the din. The Gemara has a din called psuka de le paskin moshe, and non le paskin. You have to learn kichsova. So you have to, you're not allowed to pause in the middle of a pasuk. And you're not allowed to read run-on psukim together. You're not allowed to combine two psukim together. And the same thing, you're not allowed to read the next parsha, the Baal Kriya. They don't even pause when you have a psukha summa. They lay from the end of one paragraph to begin the next paragraph. That's not right. You're supposed to pause in between. You're supposed to pause the pasuk le pasuk. When there's a summa, you have to pause a little more. When there's a psukha, you have to pause even a little more than that. That's called Kriya Satara Kichsava. You have to lay properly. So getting back again. So let's say when you're writing tefillin and mezuzah, you have to write kichsova. But let's say you didn't write so carefully, shma, shin mem ayin, and all the three letters are touching. So what does it look like? Can you tell this is a shim, this is a mem, this is an ayin? But they're touching, so that's a psul. Or they're touching in such a heavy way, it doesn't have the tzuris of a shin or a mem or a ayin. It doesn't look like the letter. So if it looks like the letter shin mem ayin, but they're touching, it's a psul, then you can scratch in between, you can scratch out a little ink in between. And it's not a problem of shaloi kichsavai. I already wrote the rest, you wrote Shema Yisrael. You already wrote the last word, the next word. You have to erase the next word because in Tefillah Mezuzah you need to see the Kisidron. So in Shulchan Aruch it says the Ksiva of the letters has to be Kisidron. You have to write Shin, then Mem, then Ayin, then Yud, then Shin. The letters have to be in order, but the letters don't have to have the Hechshir in order. Let's say the letters are touching, slightly touching, but you can see that Surah says, yes, this is clearly a Shin, that's a Mem, and that's an Ayin. So the Ksiva of the Osias was in order. They just don't get the Heksha until later. I wrote the rest of the Pasuk. They don't get the Heksha until you scratch out a little bit of the ink in between. So the Heksha doesn't have to be considered. But if there's a Negiyah, a heavy Negiyah on the Osias, there's a lot of ink that's touching, and the Shin and the Mem and Ayin, it looks like one big letter. It looks like a whole design or something. It doesn't look like a Shin and Mem and Ayin. Then you have to erase everything in Tefillin and Mezuzah, because the Ksiva has to be considered, and you don't have a Tzuris HaOis. That's where they point out in Shulchan Aruch. There are two types of problems of Mukav Gvil. In one case, if it's a heavy Negiyah, Soisiyas, that are touching each other, the Oisiyas lacked Tzuris HaOis. So in Tefillin and Mezuzah, you can't correct it later, because it's Ksiva Shalik Kisidron. But if it's just a slight Negiyah, and you can recognize that you are makir the tzuris oisios, then you have ksiva kisidron. The heksha of the oisios doesn't have to be kisidron. Yeah, so that's a question in the Martcha. We pass in Lalocha that you need mukav gvil by Sefer Torah also. Not like it sounds from Rashi, but from Rashi, it sounds as if the whole din of mukav gvil only applies to tefillin and mezuzah, doesn't apply to Sefer Torah. Just like the din of ksiva kisidron doesn't apply to Sefer Torah. Anyway, so that's how Rashi learns the kutzu shal yud means the regal hayimani. Rabbi Natan is not happy with the Rashi, the bottom tosis. The kosher, the pshit, the dein za'ois, if you don't have, you just have a blob of ink, and it doesn't have the regal yimani on the right side, so that doesn't have a tzuris ha'ois. So Rashi learns that was the Gemara's next question. Hanami pshit. Taisis holds it can't even be a havamina. How can that be? There's no room for a havamina if you have a yud. that just has a blob of ink and it doesn't have a regular yimani, so it doesn't have a tzuris ois. Parash abeiratam shehu rosho kofuf kedi aminim besom nemak kofuf rosho. So what does the Rabbeinatam mean? So there are two versions of what the Rabbeinatam said. Some Rishonim quote the Rabbeinatam as saying there's an institution of tagim. The Gemara has a number of days. Tosfos says the diagrams of what they look like. The Gemara says that there are seven letters in the Sefer Torah for the mezuzah that need tagim on top. And Tosfos has three diagrams. Tosfos Dimanas and Shatans gets. These seven letters, Shatan, Shin, Ayin, Tes, Nun, Zayin, Gimel, Tzadik, these seven letters need three tagim on top. One version is that the Rabbeinatam says that the Yud needs one tag on top on the left. These seven letters need three tagim, and the Yud needs one tag. So what if you have the Shatan's gets and it says, Shatar, Tefillin, and Mezuzah, and it doesn't have tagim? Is it Ma'akev, B'diyevet? So on Shulchan Aruch in the Hilchas Tefillin it says it's not Miyakeh B'diyeved. The Mechaber Pashtun that the Tagim are not Miyakeh B'diyeved, it's just L'chatchila. And another, and the Bach quotes Rishonim and say that he thinks that it should be Miyakeh B'diyeved. That's a Shaila. So there's a Sefer Galya Masechta. Galya Masechta is a Tshuva Sefer by Rab David al Navardik. He was the Rabbi Navardik during the lifetime of Rab Chaim Valojiner. Rab Chaim Valojiner passed away. He delivered a whole hesped, famous hesped. He had a dispute with Rab Chaim Valojiner once about a certain din Torah, and then he was a little upset about Rab Chaim Valojiner. Then years later, he realized Rab Chaim Valojiner was right, and he had big respect for him. He got Rab David al Navardik to back out from his position with a chokhmah, with a kunz. It got him to realize on his own that he made a mistake. So he had, Rav David on the Vatican had big respect. So he wrote a sefer, Galya Masechta. Why? What kind of a funny name is that, Galya Masechta? There's a Gemara in Erevin. Gemara in Erevin comments that two psukim in Sefer Shmuel. It says, Vahi David l'chol d'racha maskal v'ashem imay. It's a pasuk in v'yitnucha, for those who say v'yitnucha. So the Gemara says that David was always successful. Halacha k'masa b'chol makom. David knew how to pass Kinshayel as well. And the other pasuk says, "Vayi Shaul Mashiach b'chol deracha." Shaul was not matzliach in giving shur. The Gemara says, "How come David was matzliach and Shaul was not matzliach?" The Gemara says, "The secret was that David was galgim asechta." So this Rab David Navardikol, he was a rabbi Navardik in the early 1800s, same time as Rab Chaim Valojiner, and his name was David, and he felt that his tshuvas were gevaldik. He said, he writes in one of Shuvas, when I go to the Olam HaEmes, the Rambam is going to be mekabel upon him. I'm the first one who knew the true pshat in the Rambam. He thought his tshuvas were gevaldik. So he called the tshuvas Galya Masechta, because the Gemara says the reason why he's halacha ki David b'chol mokam, because David was Galya Masechta. What does that mean, Galya Masechta? That's a question. What did he do? What did he do that Shaul didn't do? Shaul was lo galya masechta. So you have to look there. The Rishonim had different interpretations. Anyway, so the galya masechta, learns pshat in this Rabbeinatam, that's one version, that it means the Rabbeinatam holds that the tagim amiyakev, and the Shulchan Aruch says, we pass the tagim amiyakev, but some of the later achrayim suggest it should be machma. Usually the small mezuzahs don't have tagim. The tiny mezuzahs usually don't have tagim. So if you want to save money, you're running a risk that your mezuzah may not be kosher. You have to have a bigger mezuzah to be able to put in tag. So the guy Masechta explains that Rabbeinatam means the tag on the yud, the letter yud has one tag on top on the left side, and just like he holds tagim on miyake by shatans gets all the three tagim, so by the yud he holds the tag is miyake. That's one version of the Rabbeinatam that he's talking on the tag on top of the yud. And that's what it means. The Yud is Rosho Kofuf Kidi Amina B'Somach. Everyone's going to have a whole Agadita. The top of the Yud is leaning towards the next letter, leaning towards the Chaf. There's a Tag on top. And other Rishonim quote the Rabbeinatam, it doesn't mean the Tag on top. It means on the bottom of the Yud. Usually when we would draw a Yud, if we would draw a picture of a Yud, so usually you draw a semicircle, then you write on top. You put the top of the yud. So on the bottom, on the left side, it's circular. So that's what the other Rishonim have, Pshat and Rabbein and Tam. No, the Yud has to come to a point on the bottom, on the left side. On the right side, it has to hang down a little bit. That's a regular Yimoni. On the left side, it shouldn't hang down. It should come to a point and protrude a little bit to show that it's not circular. We always make a Yud circular shape on the left side, on the bottom. So the other version of Rabbein and Tam is that the Kusur Shul Yud means it should be on the bottom. We told that story from the Maskilim about the Kusur Shul Yud. They wrote a get, and the man's name was Hillel, and he always used to spell his name Hey Yud Lama Lama. So they spelled it. So the question is, in a get also you need Kusur Shul Yud? Do you need Tagim in a get? We don't put Tagim in a get. Do you need Tagim in a get? Of course you don't need Tagim in a get. They need the Kutzah Shal Yud. Let's say, if you write a get in English, in the way we have the English alphabet, you write a get in English alphabet, is it a good or is it no good? So there's a Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah in Gittin talks about the get was written in Ashuris and the witnesses signed in Yavanis. The get was written in Yavanis and the witnesses signed in Ashuris. And said, it's okay. Even though the witnesses signed in one alphabet and the get was written in the alphabet, it's good. So does that mean the only two alphabets that are acceptable are Ashuris and Yavanis? Oh no, the Mishnah gives an example. Now, if they give every example, they didn't have English alphabet at that time. If you write a get in English, I hereby divorce you. My name is this, and my father's name is this, and my wife's name is this, and I'm divorcing my wife. She has permission. You write a whole get in English, also good. It's no good if you write a get in English. Pashto says a get is good in any language. So there's a wild opinion in the Rishonim. The Halacha recognizes all languages with respect to neder and shvua. Nefesh kisishova levati bisvasayim. If a person makes up his mind, he's not going to eat potato chips. But he never said, I hereby take a shvua, I will not eat potato chips. He never said it. So the Gemara says it's not binding. You have to say it. What language do you have to say? All languages are acceptable. Any language is acceptable. Question, how many people have to speak the language? Let's say five boys make up their own language and no one else will know what they're talking about. So is that enough? Five people have the language? Or do you have to have a country has to speak the language? Or you have to have a nation? So that's a question. How the Brisker Rav, the first Shiva Nazir, talks about that. How many people have to speak the language? There's a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi when you learn Maseches Nazir. So there's a Sefer. What's the name of the Sefer? Birchas Rosh. There's a Sefer Birchas Rosh on Nazir. So the Birchas Rosh on Nazir, part of it is printed in the back of the Gemaras. Birchas Rosh was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Balozhiner, and he gave Shurim on Balozhiner, I think, during the lifetime of Rav Chaim Balozhiner. His name is Rav Asher. He wrote the Sefer Kesa Rosh. You ever hear the Sefer Maisa Rav? Maisa Rav has all the hanhogas of the Vilna Gaon. Someone who knew the Vilna Gaon wrote over all the unusual things that the Vilna Gaon did. So then, when Rav Chaim Volozhiner passed away, so one of his students, Rav Asher, wrote a Sefer Kesa Rosh. He wrote all the hanhogas of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Very, very unusual hanhogas he had. So that person who wrote the Keser Rosh also wrote the Sefer Birchas Rosh on Brachas and Birchas Rosh on Nazir. So he quotes this in the beginning of Nazir. He quotes this Yerushalmi. If a person says, when I say cookies, I mean potato chips. And when I say no, I mean yes. When I say, he makes up his own language. No one else speaks that language. And then he takes a neder. I hereby take a neder that I will eat potato chips. So based on his definition, it means I will not eat cookies. So the Yerushalmi says the neder is binding. Nobody speaks the language. He made up his own language and he tells you what the dictionary is. Wow. So Rav Dovid Soloveitchik thought that was wild. So he discussed how many people have to speak the language. But the Halacha recognized if you take a neder in another language, it's also called. The Halacha recognizes, let's say you say Kriya Shema translation. A person that does know Hebrew, so it says Kriya Shema translation is also good. He can be Yetzir Shema Esrei translation. The Mishnah and Saita lists off which mitzvahs of Amira can only be fulfilled in the original Hebrew, and which mitzvahs of Amira can be fulfilled in translation. So, Kriyat Shema is a machloikas, we pass, can you can fulfill in translation? And Shema Esrei, no machloikas, for sure. Brachas, you can say in translation, yeah. Right, right. Right, right. Where do you see that Yavanis has a special deal?
I forgot where it is exactly.
Right. Megillah, Mishnah Megillah says you can only write a Sefer Torah in Ashuris or in Yavanis. Right. So the Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos quotes an opinion. A very shita yichido, very rare opinion. Hardly anybody holds like this. Shita yichido that kosev b'Shabbos, you only violate the 30 halachos on Shabbos. You only write ksiv on Shabbos if you write in ksav ashuris or you write in yivonis. If you write in Arabic or in English, that's only a malach mederabon. That's a wild shita based on that Mishnah Git. Mishnah talks about the get is written in ashuris and the eidim signed in yivonis. So the get is written in yivonis. So as far as a spoken language, the halacha recognizes all languages as an acceptable language. The Yotze Kriya Shema translation, so you say in English, but as far as a written alphabet, so this opinion, this rare sheet in the Rishonim that the Ramah quotes, as all the opinion, the halacha only recognizes alphabets, the alphabet of Ksav Ashuris and the alphabet of the Ksav Yevonis. Wow. As a written language, we only recognize those two. Mishnah Berurah says we don't pass them like that, Ramah. Ramah says it to explain the din. There's a Gemara in Gittin in the first paragraph. Ches, Gemara says, if you buy a field in Eretz Yisrael, years ago, this was a J&F used to buy from the Arabs. They would try to convince the Arabs to sell them. So when they would have, sometimes they would walk, Arabs would auction off fields. So they would, the Jews would try to buy. So sometimes the auction would take place on Yom Kippur, when Rav Kook was the chief rabbi. Once they were auctioning off a big parcel of land on Yom Kippur, so the representative of the JNF asked Rav Kook, is he allowed to go on Yom Kippur to make a bid? So he said, yes, that's a bid in the Gemara. That's a deal in the Gemara that you're allowed. So he went and he asked the guy to sign for him. The Gemara says, you can ask Amir al Nachri, you're not allowed to violate Amir al any malachi, you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to ask him going to do, but for the purpose of buying up Eretz Yisrael, so Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Bemakom Mitzvahs, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Etira, they allow Amir al Nachri. So why should it be more kal than any other mitzvah? So the Balu Iter is one of the Rishonim. Balu Iter says Amir al Nachri is always Mutar Bemakom Mitzvah. The Ramah quotes such an opinion, and he says people rely on that Balaita, but he says it's not right, you shouldn't rely on that. We really don't accept that opinion. The only thing we allow is Shvus the Shvus for Makam Mitzvah, to ask a guy to do a Rabbanon for Makam Mitzvah. That is a big taisus in Gittin Naches, that to ask a guy to carry in a Carmelis for Makam Mitzvah, let's say you need Chalashudis, ask a guy to please carry the food. So Shvus the Shvus for Makam Mitzvah, that we would be Makal. So why is it Mishamisha Beretzol Hitiru? So the Ramah quotes this obscure opinion that when the Goy is going to write the Shtar Mechira, he's not going to write on Ksav Ashuris. He doesn't know Greek. He didn't go to university. He doesn't know Greek. He's going to write in Arabic. So any other language that you write in, the Halacha doesn't recognize any other language. The Halacha recognizes all languages as spoken languages. That is called a Neder or a Shvua. If it's in a different language. And you heard to Kriya Shema if you say in translation in another language. But the other alphabet, Allah only recognizes two alphabets, Ksav Ashuris and Ksav Yevonis. So that's why it's mutter to have the guy write the document on Shabbos or on Yom Kippur, because it's a Shvuz, the Shvuz from Mokam Mitzvah, Shemir Shavaret Tzali Tiru, Amir Lanachri, it's only Ksiv and Midrabban. So the Mishnah Berurah says we don't paskin like this. We assume that it's a malacha deraisa to write in any language. That's what the Mishnah Berurah writes. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, he doesn't think the Ramo wrote it, he thinks that it's the forgery. He thinks that the printers put in this stupid line, but nobody holds like that. He said that Mishnah Berurah says Ashit Yechido. Nobody holds like that. Chacham Avadya, those who are familiar with the Shuvas, Chacham Avadya has fantastic Shuvas. He has one little chisor, and a lot of times he takes things very literally. So the Mishnah Berurah said that it's a Ashit Yechido. So he said, not a Ashit Yechido. There were two Rishonim to say. Good morning. You know how many Rishonim there were? Hundreds of Rishonim. So he found two who say like that. There's still a Ashit Yechido. It's an obscure Ashit. Nobody holds like that. So he has a tie against the Mishnah Berurah. It's not a Ashit Yechido. So that's a shaila. If a get can be written in any language, if you assume a get can be written in any language, if you hold like that opinion, a get can only be written either ksav Ashuris or ksav Yevonis. A get can be written in Arabic, a get can be written in English. So then you have a discussion. If you wrote a yud, it looks like a yud, but it does not kutsu shel yud, so maybe it's not called ksav Ashuris. It has to be ksav Ashuris. But if a get doesn't have to be written in ksav Ashuris, it can be written in English, in Arabic. So what's wrong if you have here this Hebrew? This is not ksav Ashuris. Ksav Ashuris, the same Torah is ksav Ashuris. The Gemara is not ksav Ashuris. So the get is going to be possible. The whole story is about it. I mean, the whole story that the Apikoros wrote, Kutzu Shel Yud. How many of the dinim of the Gemara carry over to the get? Yeah, the top tesis on the base has a maisa shahoya. The top tesis on chav tesis base maisa hayo beget shahoya. Our minigas have been right. You don't have to write this. The minigas right. Kedas moshe b'Yisrael. Everything is in accordance with Allah. So when they wrote kedas moshe b'Yisrael, the dalid was a little awkward. Kemat kemo yud. It didn't look like a dalid. Looked a little bit like a yud. So the shaila was: is the get kosher? What if you're missing the whole sentence? Because that's permission. So it's also good. You don't need that sentence. That's not makiv in the get. So let's say it was a yud. Instead of saying kedas permission, it says it's kiyas permission. So that passes the get. It wouldn't, strictly speaking, wouldn't pass on the get. Get would be good anyway. But maybe the husband had something up his sleeve. Maybe he meant something else with that. Maybe when he speaks, he uses the word yas, maybe in Yiddish, maybe some other language, maybe French, maybe German, whatever the Baal Yad says. So maybe he meant to write a yud, and it means that I don't want to give the get. So that was the question. We don't know what he meant by this. But if you're missing the whole sentence of Moshe, are you missing, that's why the word kedas is mentioned. It says Moshe Yisrael. The Sof Menem Sek left out the word kedas. So the get is good anyway. He didn't mean anything else. If it says a yud instead of a dalet, and maybe he meant in some other language, so then maybe he had something up his sleeve, then it's going to be a problem. So what are the Rabbein Eliyahu? What are the Baalei HaTosfos? I think Rabbein Eliyahu was a brother-in-law of the Rabbein Tam. So he wrote piyutim. They quote his piyutim. So what they do to establish whether it's a dalet or a yud, they call the child. Every Rabbein Eliyahu, Yenuka, they call the young child. He wasn't too sharp and he wasn't stupid. The Korbo Kedas, they said, the little kids said the word is Kedas. V'hechshiro, beis mehach d'shmaita, because the Gemara says that they had a vav that wasn't long enough and they weren't sure whether it was a vav or looked like a yud. You have to call a child who's lochakim lo tipish. The kid knows too much, so he knows what it's supposed to write. He knows that it's supposed to be a yud. He knows the pasuk by heart from Chumash. And if he's too stupid, he may not know what the letter is. He doesn't know the alphabet. So you have to get the child. It's tinek alachakim alatipish. But just like the Gemara says, the Gemara only has that the tinek alachakim alatipish on a vav or a yud or a final nun. How long it is determines what letter it is. The Gemara doesn't have it on a dalet versus a yud. It's not really a question of how long it is. It's a different question. But still, Rabbeinu Eliyahu applied it to the Dalet and Yud as well. So if the Tinek Malachak Malatipish reads it correctly, so then it's good. We don't assume that he had something up his sleeve. But let's say if they spell the word wrong, and it doesn't mean anything else. It's obvious what it means. It's just a Sofer made a mistake. So the get is good, even if it's not a Sefer Torah. That every letter is Ma'akev. The Kadas Moshe Yisrael is a phrase. You don't need it. The get is good, and the ksuba is also good without that Kadas Moshe Yisrael. So those are the three pshatim and the kutzah shel yud. Rashi learns it goes on the regal yamani, and Tosfos Tainas, that's not kutzah shel yud. If you don't have that, it's just a blob of ink. That's a double portion. It has no tzuris or ice. It couldn't have been a havamina. So Rabbi Natan says, no, it goes on something on the left side, but it's not clear. One version is like the Galia Masechta says, it goes on the left side on top. You need one tag, whereas in Shatnas Getz, you need three tagim each letter. Each Shatnas Getz needs three tagim. And Rabbi Natan apparently owns tagim amiyakim, so the yud needs one, kutzu shel yud, needs one tag, and he holds tagim amiyakim. But going to the Shulchan Aruch, Tagim and Amyakiv on Shatnas Getz, so why should it be Me'akiv by the Yud? So that's why others read the Rabbeinu Tam, no, it goes on the bottom of the Yud, on the left side, that it shouldn't be rounded, it should be come to a point, and not only come to a point, it should protrude a little bit on the bottom, to exaggerate it. Kutzu Shul Yud. Okay, so they didn't say for Torah. Pashto says it doesn't apply to a Get. A Get is missing Kutzu Shul Yud. That's a joke. Yeah, what's the idea of Mukav Gvil? It's an interesting idea. We have Torah Shebichsav, we have Torah Shebalpeh. So every letter in the Sefer Torah has to be surrounded with empty space to demonstrate that there are tons of Torah Shebalpeh surrounding every letter in the Sefer Torah. You have to have a lot of traditions on Torah Shebalpeh and every letter in the Sefer Torah. That's what it means, Mukav Gvil. You have to have, there's a lot of empty space, a lot, you have to know how to read in between the lines and in between the letters of the Sefer Torah. Many of the drushes of the Torah Shebalpeh are nidrush by reading in between the lines. Why does the Chumash switch from Zohar to Nekeva, from Yochid to Rabim, and the extra Lashonis and the missing Lashonis? So that's reading in between the lines. Most of the Midrash are Torah Nidrashes, man. You're reading in between the lines. So to demonstrate that there's a lot to read in between the lines, you need every letter has to be Mukav Gvil to demonstrate that you're missing a lot of Torah Shebal Peh. Can't understand the Torah Shebichsav without the Torah Shebal Peh to elaborate on it. That's a din of Mukav Gvil. Yeah, what does the Mar continue? Omer Hashem bar Nadvoch Mishmei de Rab Yudin. He says over a din, Nikav Tocho Shalhei Kosher. Yerechai posel. Yerech, the Yerech of the hay. You have, let's say, a dalid, and then you make it into a hay by adding the left leg afterwards. So let's say the right leg of the hay is Yerecha shel hay. So a hole developed over there. So the leg on the right side, the right leg of the hay, is not long enough. It doesn't look like a hay. So then it's posel, the Gemara is going to say. The Gemara explains, Nikav. Does it look like a hay? Does it have a tzura of a hay or not? But on the left leg of the hay, even if the left leg was, let's say, so long, and a hole developed, and now it's much smaller, there is no minimum size for the left leg of the hay. As long as there's something there, it's good enough. So that's the one pshat. Nikev Tocho Shalhei. Tocho Shalhei means the left leg. It's called. Why is it called Tocho? Because the hay basically is a dalid, and then you put this left leg there inside the dalid. That's the one pshat. The Rashi has another pshat, Lishna Achrina, that's the first pshat. Tocho means the regal shebifnim, the left leg is Tocho. Then Lishna Achrina, Rashi has a second pshat. Tocho means Hagvil v'hacholak shebetocho. You have a hay, and there's a rectangular empty space in the middle of the hay. So a hole developed over there. The hole, the entire rectangular blank square shape in the middle of the hay was pushed through. So the top of the hay and the leg of the hay, it doesn't have mukav gvil. It's touching empty space. So why is it taka good? It's lacking mukav gvil. So one way to say is, there's no din of mukav gvil. You don't need gvil. You shouldn't have it touching ink. But here it's not touching any ink. It just comes, let's say you're writing, say, v'tarot tefillin mezuzah, you write a final chaf, touches to the bottom of the parchment. to the bottom of the page. So there's no mukav gvil, but it's not touching another vayra. So is that possible? That's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. So some say mukav gvil just means if two oisiyas are touching each other, if you have ink from another letter. But if the ois comes to the end of the page, that doesn't pose a problem. That's one way to say nikav tocher shalhei is not a problem because ein mukav gvil pasels if it's touching another letter. But if it just goes to the end of the page, it's not a problem. The other way to say in Shulchan Aruch is, Vesiyosef has two suggestions. The other way to say in Shulchan Aruch is, the din amukav gvil is only a din b'shas ksiva. If I write the Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzah, and I have a chop sofis or a nun sofis, from the very outset, before the ink dries, it's already touching to the bottom of the page, it's taka no good. But if I made a letter hey, and at the time that I wrote it, and the ink dries, it's a good letter. And after the ksiva, then a puncture, then a hole develops. So since b'shas ksiva was mukav gvil, the fact that it's no longer mukav gvil, the fact that now the ink of the letter borders on an empty space, it's not bordering on any gvil, that's not a problem. You only need mukav gvil at the time of ksiva. So that would... Then there would be room to make a even, let's say you wrote all the letters separately, and then a little drop of ink spilled later. The Sefer Torah, everything dried. It's not called the Ksav Shel Kayama until it dries. Because man, it's still moist, it's not a Ksav Shel Kayama. When they write a get, and the husband wants to divorce his wife 1, 2, 3, so you have to wait till it dries. Because man, the ink didn't dry, Ksav Shel Kayama. You can change all the letters and no one will realize it. See, a lot of times when people are in a rush, so they have to hold the get with the wet ink on top of the, they turn on the gas range, they hold it on top, so the heat from the gas range should dry off the thing, should dry off the ink. So the same thing in the Sefer Torah, you have to have Ksav Shel Kayama. So let's say you wrote a Sefer Torah and all the letters were written properly and nothing is touching. And then later on, a little ink, a little drop of ink drops on the Sefer Torah and connects slightly two letters to each other, but each letter is clearly readable. This is a shin, and that's a mem, and that's an ayin. It's just a slight negia, kol shehu, but you can figure out the letters. So according to one opinion, that wouldn't puzzle, because it was not the calculate tzurusoisius, and mukav gvil is only a din b'shas ksiva. And the others hold, no, mukav gvil is even a din shalei b'shas ksiva. It has to remain mukav gvil throughout, but it doesn't mean you need gvil. If you come to the end of the page, that's okay. It's only a chisorin if you have ink connecting it with another letter. But if the ink fell later and it passed, it would pass. Everything is machlekes in Shulchan Aruch on this sif, and Hilchas Tefillin. What happened, the story over here? Agra was the last nine, was the father-in-law of Rababa. Agra Chamua de Rababa. He had a pair of tefillin. What did he have over here? Rashi says it was tefillin. Ifsika le kara dehei deha'om v'nikva. He had a pair of tefillin, and somehow a nekiv developed and punctured a hole in the leg of the hay. The leg of the hay is the right one is called the kara. Also the kara de Rababa. So he came to his son-in-law, who is a and the son of Allah told him what it says in the price of before. And the Shtai book, Yeshiva is found. Kosher and Malakos. It has the Tzuris, then it's good. If it doesn't have the Tzuris, then it's not good. Then he more tells the story about the Tinek Lachak Mule Tipish. They had in the newspapers that one of the big Tamir HaChachamim, Rabbi Sheftel Newberg, had passed away. He had cancer for a while. He was very strong in learning. He was a very strong Baal Tefila. He was taking care of the whole Neir Yisrael. His father-in-law before him, Rabbi Neuberger, was a brother-in-law of Rabbi Rudiman. So he was really the one who built up the whole Rabbi Rudiman, gave the shurim. Rudiman was a great guy, but Rabbi Neuberger, the brother-in-law, was the one who raised all the money. And he had all the buildings, and he had all the balabatim to support the yeshiva. So when Rabbi Neuberger senior passed away, his son Sheftel took over. His son Sheftel just passed away a couple of months ago from cancer. So they wrote up stories about him after he passed away. So that one day, he was in, as a young child, before Bar Mitzvah, way before Bar Mitzvah, they had a shayla on the Sefer Torah, whether the letter was good or not. So they called him to ask whether it looks like a vav or a yud. So that day he felt so proud. He came home when he went to eat breakfast at home, told his mother they had a shayla on the Sefer Torah. They were all the rabbanim were there, and they asked me the shayla. All the rabbanim were there, and they asked me the shayla. He was so proud. He has a little shayla. He didn't realize. Yeah, there's the kid the lo chakam lo tikkun. That's the story of the Gemara. Then the Gemara continues with the story of Tagum. That's nine lines from the top. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. A beautiful quote in the Gemara. Yishor she'ol ha-Moshe l'amor. Moshe Rabbeinu was on top of Har Sinai. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rebbeinu Shlomo is writing a Sefer Torah. This is an agarata. That's not what happened. The Rebbeinu Shlomo didn't write the Sefer Torah in Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down with the Sefer Torah. Came down with the Luchas. The Rebbeinu Shlomo engraved the Luchas, but he didn't write him a Sefer Torah with Tagum. So this is an imaginary story. He says Rebbeinu Shlomo was writing a Sefer Torah, and then he's about to give it to Moshe Rabbeinu on top of Har Sinai, and he says, "No, I have to add on top." Mitzvah Kodesh Baruch Hu Sheyoshev Rebbeinu Shlomo is sitting because he ksorim laosius. He's putting in the Tagum. I'm looking at Rebbeinu Shlomo. He makev al yadach. It's good the way it is. What do you need the chash kalach for? What do you have to add on the Tagum? I'm alone. No. Adam Echad Yesh, there's going to be a big Tamachachim, Sha'as and Niyaz Pesach Kamadoris, in many generations in the future, is going to be a big Tamachachim, Akiva and Yes and Shmo, that's Rabbi Akiva, Sha'as and Liba, Shachol Kot, Sakot, Tili, Tili, Shalalachis. He's going to darshan a new Midah Shatar in the Dreshin span, and all the Tagim, he's going to darshan the Roshas. Yeah, we don't paskin like Rabbi Akiva. We don't darshan any, the Gemara doesn't quote one stitch of the Drosha. Of Rabbi Akiva, nothing. None of the Tilim Shalom. Another quote, because we don't pass like this. So why did Rabbi Shalom put in the Tagim if we don't pass like that? The answer is the Gemara has a concept of the different drachim and darshanim psukim, and if you're using the correct Midrash Atan and Rashi's fan, you're entitled to European. So Rabbi Akiva, that was one mahala, and the Rabbi Shalom put in the Tagim because that was one legitimate mahala. Over the generations, that was outvoted. We decided we don't like that style. So, but the Rebbeinu Shlomo put it in because the Eilu Niela did it in Shimcha, because the Akida had such a shita. So Rabbi Moshe Rabbeinu says, what is he going to say, Tagim? What is he going to say, Roshes on the Tagim? Amalafan Rebbeinu Shlomo Harehuli, show me what it's all about. Amalachazol Acharecha. Olach Yoshe Besok Shimon Meshuris, Moshe Rabbeinu sat in the back of the classroom. And Rabbi Akiva is giving a shiur. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand one word that they were talking about. Such highfalutin terminology, achetz and agav and malos and akiyum. This he thought it's a distortion of the Torah. This is not the Torah that I was given at Harsinai. Moshe Rabbeinu felt bad. They distorted the Torah. So many generations went by. Total distortion of what I was told in Hasin. They never told me this. Malos with the Kiyam, with the Chepts of the Begar. What are they talking? Even she gave a Dover Echad. They came to one aspect in the Shir. Amalek Amina Rebbe Menayim of Ahad. They asked Rabbi Kiyam, where do you get this idea from? Amalek Halacha Moshe Misina. That's Halacha Moshe Misina. So the Gemara said, Vinsiashva Daito is Moshe Rabbeinu come down. Why? Because he felt bad. They didn't mention his name, and now they finally mentioned his name. No, the Pashim Shat is he thought that the Torah was going to be distorted over the generation. He's talking about Malos and Kiyam, Achetz and Gabra. He never heard of these things. He thought that they're changing the whole, they're going to distort the whole Torah. But then when Rabbi Akiva said it did, and he told me the message, where did you get it from? He said, no, it's Halacha Moshe Misina. Everything is based on what they heard from Moshe Rabbeinu. This is like the mashal that they give is that they built a bridge and they showed it to Euclid. And they said the bridge was based on Euclidean geometry. So Euclid says, what does that have to do with my geometry? He explains there are certain theorems that are logically correct. If you put together one theorem with another one, if you have a rigorous proof, so that shows that that's also true. Then if you keep on combining that with another theorem, so that's a rigorous proof that that's true. If you have enough built on each other, this is based on that, that's based on that, so then... Is that the right time?
Yeah.
I apologize.
Or have to say it. I just don't remember this.
Okay. I apologize. So they explain, if you keep on going with all the theorems, you you'll get trigonometry, you get a lot of geometry. So the same thing by Moshe Rabbeinu. The days of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was a little bit of Torah. And then built on that, they had rigorous proofs to prove this. And then the next generation, they had Ram, keep on adding on. Moshe Rabbeinu thought that they had distorted everything. And then he says, no, everything is based on Torah's Moshe, just over the generation. You keep on adding on and adding on. If you put together two theorems, that's a rigorous proof of the third idea. Okay, we'll continue. Apologies.